Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everyone. I'm Lauren Leibowitz, and welcome, welcome, welcome to Blog Talk Radio and How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Shoes. It's Thursday, October 29th, and once again, we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, as I do every Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time. And we don't disappoint here at How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Shoes, because we have another fascinating show for you today, and we want to hear from you. So please, please call in and give us a question for my very special guest today, and we'd love to hear from you. So you can do so by dialing 347-857-2710. We are here live until 3:30 p.m. Pacific Time. So now, 3 o'clock till 3:30, you can catch us. So that number again is 347-857-2710. And I also wanted to mention, last week we didn't get a chance to get into our serious reservation segment because our topic was just so fascinating with Michael Solomon. And so this week we hope to, because we have just as a fascinating guest this week. So stay tuned towards the latter part of the show when we were going to talk about serious reservations, and you'll hear all about my latest restaurant revelations a little bit later. So let's get started. My guest today is writer-director David Betances, and David was born and raised in Chicago, a fabulous city. I love that city. And David began his film career as an actor in the 1993 Warner Brothers comedy Airborne. And after graduating from New York University's film school in 2000, where he was so talented and creative, he wrote, produced, and directed not one, not two, but three, can you believe it, three award-winning short films. After that experience in New York, David moved here to Los Angeles and worked in production, and he also did some work as a writer and an editor in independent films and television. And this has been a very stellar year for David. This year, Tristan Leo Star Films hired David to write, direct, and edit the newly released film Fast Lane, starring Stephen Bauer, Olivia Brown, and Anthony Ray Parker for Maya Pictures. And I understand that it's just now out on DVD, and we're going to learn more about David's exciting new feature. So let's say hello to David Betances. Hello, David. Welcome to the
show. Hello, Lauren. Hi, thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Well, it's lovely to have you here. I mean, your bio kind of is amazing. There's so much of you on paper, and now we get to have you in the hot seat. So this is very exciting.
Well, this is a first, and I definitely welcome the opportunity to be as open as possible about how things happened and how I got here. So thank you.
Beautiful. So I want to say a big woohoo and congratulations on the release of Fast Lane. That's amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, and I mean, it's a funny thing. People ask me, well, what's it like living in L.A.? And you've lived out in L.A. for so long as opposed to Chicago, and I spent 2 years in New York. And I said, well, in L.A., you can actually, you know, come to a day where a good friend will come up to you and actually say, hey, do you think you can write and direct this movie? Because I found a distribution company that's looking to make one. And it literally that day happened, and I took advantage of it, and here we are. So
Wow, it was that simple? Somebody just came up to you and said, David, let's just do this thing? It was that easy?
Well, in one sense, yes, because it did actually happen. The hard part is, and what most people need to get with, is that it's going to take some years before that type of trust and relationship building will actually develop to that opportunity.
So
you know,
can you tell us how you got to that fabulous day and a few of the things that you did? So I know there are a lot of aspiring filmmakers in L.A. This is the place to be for film. So what were some of the steps that you took to reach your goal?
Yeah. Well, to start at the beginning, I started in the business as an actor, and my first foray into that was at the American Academy of Dramatic Arts, where I went to study film and stage acting, and my first opportunity to be in a movie came in 93, and once I got behind the camera, and this was a big-budget Hollywood movie. This was a Warner Brothers film that was directed by Rob Bowman, and I spent more time behind the camera watching the process. And I realized that I thought in that way. Like I would see a take happen and I'd be at the monitor and I said, you know what, I think he needs to move, into myself of course, I think he needs to move a little to the left and say that a little bit louder. And then the director would yell, cut, okay, I need you to, you know, move a little to the left and say that last line really loud.
That's amazing.
You know, and that was,
somebody, a professional, actually validated your inner thoughts.
Yes, and I found that I identified with what he was going through more than my own concerns about whether or not I was getting the character right or whether or not I was saying the line correctly or anything. So I always call acting my first love, but you don't marry your first love. You know, you marry the love that you're going to spend the rest of your life with, and that's where I can be up at 3 o'clock in the morning concerned about whether the story, the whole movie is working, where I found I was a little less patient even with myself when it came to acting, and am I getting this line right? Am I getting this motivation right? You know, so that was it was a pivotal point for me once I got behind the camera on a major feature film to realize I felt more at home with myself when I was overseeing all of this in my mind.
So at what age did you first get behind a camera, so to speak?
Well, immediately after Airborne, I went to finish my first year at the Academy and knew I was a director and not an actor. And so I went back to school in Chicago to get my general education courses done so I could transfer to film school. So now that I knew that this is what I wanted, I figured I need to go and figure out the best way to learn all of the skills necessary to be a good director. So I started studying screenwriting, and then that developed into my work at NYU as a producer and as a director, and ultimately graduating. So once I left film school, and this was in 2000, I had produced a short film called Before Takeoff, which won some international awards and really gave me a bigger experience because I was at NYU for such a short time. I was only there for 2 years, and it was literally from the time I got off the plane and set myself up in the dorm, we were making films for 2 years, and then I left. You know, people still ask me to this day what New York was like, and I'm like, I have no idea because, you know, we just made movies.
Was there a time, did you know as a kid when you were growing up that you wanted to be a director, or what kinds of activities growing up did you do that led you to where you are now?
Okay.
Were you a ham? Were you always, Daddy, give me the camera, I want to take the pictures, or...
Well, something everyone needs to understand is that I am a twin. I grew up with a twin brother who is an amazing actor, by the way. And he's actually filming a television show as we speak.
is that here in L.A.?
Yes, yep, he's in L.A. He's out shooting with an amazing director, John Avnet, right now on a new show. But he and I, we grew up with attention because we were twins. I mean, it was just that simple. You know, we couldn't walk down the street without someone saying, hey, are you guys twins? And my father is an amazingly huge influence for both of us because he is a very dynamic speaker. He's a motivational speaker and a diversity trainer and consultant for Souder Batanzas and Associates, which is a company out of Chicago. So literally growing up, we grew up backstage or being brought on stage in front of, you know, 1,000, you know, to 2,000 people every other weekend because he was speaking somewhere and he'd be like, these are my boys. And so we always had a presence that was very evident. And that's why it naturally progressed into acting. But once I started to, you know, really see the real secret for both of us is that my first film, you would have to say, looking back, is my History Fair video project when I was in high school. We actually won an award from the city for our History Fair video, and I'm still very proud of that.
Is this something you and your brother, what is your brother's name?
Daniel.
Daniel. Is this something you and Daniel did together?
Yes, yeah. We worked on all of our projects together up until Airborne, and that's when I kind of made my split. my professional split, that
Your
is.
Your professional split? So it seems that it's so fascinating, twins that are in the same industry, one on one side of the camera, one on the other side of the camera. So are there any projects in the works to work together, you directing Daniel?
Well, actually, Dan was brought on to Fastlane. He played the detective in the movie, a very important role, and he really grounded the film. for me, because I know his work so well, but it's really tough for me to envision a film without him being the lead, partly because we have such our experiences growing up are so similar that it is just easy for me to know what will work, quote-unquote, you know, from a story point of view with him, if I can visualize him in it. So that's more, that's just natural because we grew up with a lot of the same taste and a lot of the same focus in terms of developing ourselves as actors and filmmakers.
How difficult was it working with your brother and telling him, bossing him around, telling him to stand here, do this, or
he is the most professional. It was not difficult at all. I mean, he was the one person I didn't have to worry about. You know, that's why it was so relieving that he was able to do the film, because it wasn't a plan from the very beginning. The movie happened so fast in terms of the way it was written, how much time we had to prep it, and then we shot the film in so few days that it was just, I was just so thankful to get him. It was a sigh of relief. And and his beautiful wife Andrea is also in the film. She like I said, these two are as a team are amazing actors, but they were the only two that I felt so comfortable and relaxed that thank God they're here, that I can just actually watch some, you know, some ground. I didn't have to concern myself with whether or not they were going to hit their marks or do anything. I find that in independent films, especially when you have very very low budget, you just try to minimize all the things that you have to worry about. Because you're going to worry about most things, but if I can eliminate those things, and Daniel was definitely one of those that I didn't have to worry about.
Would you consider yourself an actor's director?
Yes, I would, in the sense that it's the basis. Like I say, it's my first love. It's really what taught me drama. You know, was the process of having to go inside to yourself and emotionally connect to what's happening on the page, and then find a way to bring that out. That to me is what would make me an actor's director now. But an actor's director to me also seems to me more like you're more performance driven, as if that's the only thing that matters, as opposed to the technical side of making sure that you're cinematically expressing what you need to reach the emotion as well. And I think that balancing those two is probably the hardest trick for most good directors. You know, it wouldn't be one or the other. If I do my job well, then I'm cinematically setting things up so that the actor can do what they need to do and feel comfortable and safe enough to do that within the constraints of being in focus and directly in the light, you know, like everything is where it should be on a technical side too.
I was going to say, as an actor's director, then you would probably understand the point of reference from an actor, so that in order to bring out the best in him, you could have a dialogue and discuss with him in a certain format that perhaps a director wouldn't understand, who's just into setting up the scene, who doesn't understand the perspective of an actor. But you've been there, so you probably have the best of both worlds, because you have a better idea of how to communicate what you want to an actor in a way that's understood.
Yeah, I would find that the best qualities that I could have as a director is being able to get an actor out of trouble. Because I'm sure a lot of directors can direct, you know, actors' performances to an extent, but if the actor gets in trouble, very few directors can get them out of trouble. And I think that that's the safety net that I try to provide as much as I can.
That's great. That's a great talent to be able to do that.
Yeah, so, and again, it goes back to first love, you know, like you have to truly understand it. You don't even have to be the best at it, as long as you've been through it to the point where you can explain it from their point of view. You know, like if emotionally you're having a tough time reaching this beat, why don't you try thinking of it this way, you know, or let's, you know, look at it from a different vantage point. Those are tough conversations to have when you've got 200 people all waiting for you to hurry up and get the shot. You know?
Yes, there are a lot of other constraints to deal with as a director. You have budgets, you have other, like you said, other people, from the crew to the actors. So it's truly a gift to be able to put all that together successfully and have a finished product. Are there any directors that you admire in their style that you would like to mimic, in a sense, take a little bit from here or there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, my classics, my guys, and they tend to be more guys, but I'm also a fan of Jodie Foster and a few other very strong female directors. But Ridley Scott is huge for me. Steven Spielberg is more of an obvious choice, but I tend to like the films that are a little more obscure, you know, for him. I thought Munich was an amazing execution, just truly, truly brilliant. But Michael Mann is a huge influence on me. I'd say The Insider is probably one of my favorite, if not the number one film for me, because everyone always asks, what are your favorite films? You know, what's your number one favorite film? And I'm like, well, which genre? You know, like which? What
I'd say it was Fast Lane, if you ask me. That's so far my number one film right now.
Well, Fast Lane is funny because it definitely is a amalgam. It's a conglomeration. It's a mix of a perfect blend of a lot of influences from different directors for me that all had to come together at one point in time. So. Mm-hmm.
So what is your next project? Are you going to continue with the genre of Fastlane, or do something completely different?
Well, I love action, and Fastlane is technically an action film. You know, so for me right now, that's how the market views me, and I think it's important to have that understanding before you take your next step, whatever that next step is how does the market see you? Because we are delivering a product, and we have to figure out the best way to tell a story and get it there. But right now I'm an action director, so my next challenge is how do I make a film that will take the advantage of action, but then bring it into more drama / romance / thriller. You know, you want to be as diverse as possible, but you have to respect how you're seen first before you can break away. And so I find that it's a tricky thing of how do you pitch, you know, your next project that's going to make sense that the director of Fastlane did this next. You know, like that, making those connections before you take your next step, I think is very valuable, especially right now when you're very dependent on the market financing yourself, you know, financing your next film or your next project.
True. I guess you want to continue in that genre, but not, let's say, if for some reason you want to do a romantic comedy or a more serious piece. I guess there's that fine line when and if you come to it where you might be known as the action director and do another film and somebody says, well, I don't see you doing that. So I guess it's like with actors who are on a television show for 5 years or more, and so when that show no longer airs, is in production, and they go do another project, they're seen sometimes as that character, and it's very challenging for them to find new employment because people see them as that one person.
Yeah, especially when you've grown to love them over the years. You know, like a cast member of Friends, let's say, it's hard to see them doing anything but the way that they did that particular character.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Exactly.
But the affinity that you have, you also have to know where your bread is buttered. And if you're good at something, and Fastlane isn't more of an action film than it is a drama, than it is anything else. To me, as a story, it kind of just works in its own little genre because it doesn't really fulfill, you know, more than just being, you know, a cool little project, you know, because it just happened so fast. The writing of it was a first draft. And this is the amazing thing about Fastlane, the beautiful thing about Fastlane, is we were able to get extremely talented people together for a script that was literally a first draft. It was written in 16 days. We prepped it in about 2.5 weeks, and we shot it in 10 days. And so
what was the cost of making the film, if I may ask?
Well, it was under 75. I'll say that. But we made it for less than 100. How's that? You know, like but to deliver any product for less than 100 grand that can actually deliver any type of story is a huge feat, you know, on its own. And I'm really, really, really proud of the team that came together for this. But the reason why I bring that up is because the project happened so fast, there wasn't much time for me to really develop the script and make sure that it kind of fit all of the genre requirements or all of the... It just, the story just kind of happened. And dots started to connect, and by the time I literally just stopped writing the end on the last page or typing that in, you know, and hit print or send, you know, they said, okay, great, let's go. This is perfect. Let's do it.
So what was that feeling like when everything was said and done on the script and you hit print and send and now you are about to embark on your first directorial film? I mean, what were you feeling at that time?
Well, honestly, just hearing you say it like that too, it's I finally felt like, ah, now I can do my work. Like I'm sitting in myself right now. I can actually do, I've been talking about it for so long. I'd been prepping by working as a producer and a writer and all these other things, but anyone who's worked with me in those capacities knows that those weren't my best things. but now I could finally just go do the job. You know, just go do what it seems so clear to me in my head.
Were you comfortable in these shoes?
I was very comfortable in the shoes, but yeah, I mean, so yes, I was comfortable in the shoes, but I also knew that this is the work. So now it's time. You don't really have time to just go relax and, oh, I got it. It's awesome. You know, you kind of like, oh my God, I got it. Okay, who do I got to call now? I got to call so-and-so for casting, and we got to try this person over here for, you know, and the producing team, it's sort of now I can see my work in front of me. Whereas opposed to some jobs, when you're not working in your heart, you know, you're not working with your heart, you're doing something to pay the bills, and it's harder to get that motivation and that momentum going. Whereas once I said, oh my God, I'm a director now, okay, cool, I can do this. Now, here's what we're going to do, blah, 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 blah. And it was very overwhelming, and it was very, it was just amazing. But the adrenaline kick on you know, living what I had talked about for so long was just incredible. So
It sounded as, I didn't mean to interrupt, but it sounded as if you didn't really have time to think about all those negative thoughts that a lot of us can get wrapped up into when we're about to embark on something that means so much to us. Is it going to be good? Who's going to see it? I hope it comes out okay. Because you were on a time constraint, so you just did it. And you didn't worry about that other stuff. So it's a perfect example of hopefully letting go of that other stuff that sometimes
you totally hit it on the head, because ultimately, I'm a perfectionist, like I think any real artist, you know, who's trying to actually say something or do something within themselves. And the problem is that you get so stuck on things being perfect that you never let it go. And at some point, you just have to let it go, where it has to be judged. It has to be put out in the world. You know, people have to see it, whether it's finished or not, whether it's perfect or not, no longer matters. What matters is simply that it's finished. And one of my favorite books is by Stephen Pressfield, called The War of Art. And one of the major lessons in that book is just about having to be judged as a professional, that at some point you just have to let it go. And that book, you know, and that particular comment that he's making in there became true on that day. The day that I literally have the check, you know, that it was written, and it was November 12th, 2008, when I found out that was when I found out I was about to be a professional.
That's wonderful, but you're exactly right. I think if we can let go of the end result, I mean, how we get to that end result, you might want to take a straight path, but somebody else is pulling you on a circuitous route. It doesn't really matter what that route is, as long as that end result is the same. And so by letting go, and let's face it, people talk about us anyway. You have no control of what people say, and people are going to judge you anyway. So it's just a lot of baggage to carry around. And if you can't get a bellboy to carry your baggage, forget it.
Well, I cringe on the day and the future day that I will be at an NYU class somewhere where all the NYU, you know, film students are going to sit down and look at this movie that I made and go, what? You know, like, that's what you're here for? You're here to talk about that? And the beautiful thing is that, you know, the simple fact is that, yes, and we just, you know, this movie is now presented everywhere. We have a movie that has been distributed through Blockbuster and Netflix, and it's at Amazon.com now, and we're now going international. So it is a product, and it is out, and you do the best you can with the time that you have, and then you let it go. There's nothing else you can hold on to, and I think that that's part of the genius of letting go is that's where I found my peace after it was done. I didn't find it on the day that I, you know, started doing it. It's more on the day it was finished and I knew that the DVD was out, and then I could go, oh, man, what a ride.
Exactly. Now, tell us again, people can just go to Amazon, and where can we get the DVD?
Oh, yes. It's at, we're at Amazon.com. That's the safest place to get it in terms of the market. But we're also at Blockbuster. So it's called Fastlane, and so it's right next to other films with the name Fast in it. So that's and we're you can Google us and you can find it. You can basically purchase it anywhere, but Amazon.com is going to be your best bet.
This is so exciting. This is really exciting, and I'm going to share. We didn't talk about it, and it's amazing. We only have a few minutes left. Is that you're also a very talented photographer?
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Are you surprised that I said that?
I enjoy. The thing is this: I love actors. Number one, and if I had to ask myself, what would I really want to do on my off time to keep myself literally behind the camera? And so I started taking headshots of actors and working with actors. And another side thing that I do to keep me motivated and moving is editing demo reels for actors. Because I, as a storyteller, you kind of see all these little bits and pieces of how to shape somebody's, you know, career, how you see them. And it really has to do with how you put those images or those scenes together that give me a thrill, and it's all short-term based. You know, like, you're not going to work on a demo reel for 3 months. You know, it usually can be over in a couple of days. But it's an enlightening, you know, like, push to be working with great material from actors, you know. So I just find that I really identify and love working with them, and it keeps me directing. It keeps me focused on how do I shape this person, you know.
And then you're behind the camera. Maybe it's a still camera, but still you get a different perspective on your subject, being the actor, and it gives you more insight into future directorial choices.
Yes, and the future is looking very good because of Fastlane. A lot of opportunities have presented themselves, and I'm really blessed and thankful, you know, to Maya Pictures for opening up that door, but also Tristan Leostar Films, who is Dina Almeida, and she found me and through a friend of ours, a producing partner that I worked with on a previous film. And so just, you know, I'm just fascinated by how the people that we know and that we're connected with, you know, lead us to become who we are. And the trust, ultimately, that other people have to have. If I'm taking your photo or doing an interview with you, you're trusting me, you know, with having the right energy and the right motivation to be able to give you what you need. And that always gives me a thrill when I know that I have that trust, because then I can't waste it. You know, I can't lose this opportunity to do right by the people that I work with. And that I think is an important thing that I've learned over the past 9 months.
It's beautiful. It's also wonderful to hear your enthusiasm, and it's a domino effect. You're enthusiastic. I can't help but be enthusiastic about you and your pursuit of your art. So congratulations on the release of Fastlane. You know, we're out of time here, but before we go, I want to let our listeners know where people can contact you. They could go to your website, David, at www.davidbatansis.com, and it's David, D-A-V-I-D, Batansis, B-E, B as in boy, E-T, Tom, A-N-C-E-S.com, or also they can go to davidbatansis@yahoo.com to contact you. So I want to thank you so much, David, for taking the time out of your very busy creative schedule and coming on the show and sharing your story with us. It's wonderful. I wish you much success.
Can I just do a quick shout-out?
Sevier
Crespo, thank you very much for opening up this door for me. I really do appreciate it, my man. And thank you very much, Lauren, for, you know, allowing me to be here. I really do appreciate it.
Absolutely. We'll be in touch. You'll keep us posted so we can share more of your successful story with our listeners.
Thank you.
All right. Beautiful. We'll be talking soon. Thanks for joining me.
All right. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye. Well, you know what? I just don't know what to say. We, again, a second show, and we haven't even touched Serious Reservations, but I do want to thank all of my listeners for tuning in today as they tune in every week. You're marvelous. I couldn't have this show without you, and it's been wonderful having you join me for 30 minutes of fun with David Batansis. And once again, I want to thank David. Next week, Thursday, November 5th at 3 p.m. Pacific time, join me when my guest will be Ben Hill, Executive Director of the Hollywood Fringe Festival. And the festival is a massive arts event coming to venues across Hollywood, California in June. Thank you, and goodbye.